south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. First, I'd like to apologize for not having a show on Friday the 18th. Just happened to have blown out my voice, and none of Mother's usual remedies worked, not this time. I've been doing this show 5 years or so now, and I think I've missed exactly 6 shows in all that time. Not bad, I guess. Anyway, you might have detected my voice was in shreds in the show I did last Sunday, and it's recovered a bit now, so here we go. Okay, in the past I've spoken a bit about Latin American currencies, that is, their funny money versus U.S. funny money. Because, you know, down here when you open a bank account, you can get one in the local currency and U.S. dollars. Some accounts are convertible within the same account, too. And, of course, if you wire transfer any U.S. dollars down to a Latin American bank account and you have it converted instantly to the local funny money, they'll do it at the absolute best rate you can get. Whereas, with the guys on the street changing money and those money-changing booths in shopping malls and at the airport, the so-called cambios, you can count on them screwing you out of 5, 10, even 20%. And by the way, whatever Latin American country you're in, you'll always have to have some of the local funny money on hand because locals, especially off the gringo tourist trail, only accept their own crappy currencies. By the way, you gotta love those Latin American currencies. They're oh so colorful and have all those pompous genocidal dictators on them. Whereas U.S. funny money is bland and bluish-green and, well, kind of boring. In fact, I've even overheard Latins commenting about our money while holding it in their hands. Of course, they'll never say that to a gringo. But I've heard them say things like, how come the great big U.S. of A, with all its power and might, how come it doesn't have more colorful and interesting money? On that score, I've heard them say, they've really got us beat. And really, I have to agree with them. Though as far as the dead presidents we've got on our money, for now at least, there's not one pompous genocidal headshot of a dictator to be seen. But you can bet fashions will prevail and those rainbow colors will come and those conservative old righteous founding fathers and statesmen will be pushed aside for today's more fashionable cult of personality. Surely they'll be replaced with scumbag politicians. And yes, they will be politicians because there are no statesmen to be found. And if you don't believe that, just try to name one yourself. Bet you're a Bitcoin you can't. So anyway, when expats come down to Latin America, they do have to transfer money generally, and it lands in a U.S. or local funny money account. That's when new expats find out what so many of us long-term expats found out many years ago. Surprise, surprise, you can get U.S. dollar accounts that pay 4, 5, 6, 7, even 8% a year, believe it or not. So what's the risk? Well, like I said in past shows, if you pick one of the 2 or 3 strongest banks in that Latin country, your money will be safe. Though you do have to be very selective about the bank you choose. Because you know the average Latin country might have 20, 30, 40, 50, even 100 different banks. But there'll be those top 3. Banks that have been around 25, 30, 50, even 100 years. I'm talking about private, very conservative banks that are not beholden to the government. Because you see, in Latin America, a private bank is really private. Allow me to explain. Turns out, the top families, the big 10 or 20 of the rich established families in any Latin American country, they own the sugar and pineapple and coffee plantations, the mining interests, the cement companies, Coca-Cola, you get the idea. They're definitely not new kids on the block, and they've owned these things for 50, 75, 100, even 200 years. We're talking about gigantic landowners here with huge payrolls and tremendous cash flow. So, where do you think they bank? In someone else's bank? Why should they? They have payrolls to meet in their own funny money and deal in huge export profits in U.S. dollars. Which is why, so many years ago, these top families started their own banks. So as you occasionally read about banks here and there going under, that is if you can read Spanish, just remember there's always a handful of banks in any Latin country founded by the oldest and wealthiest families that really are immune from all that. So with 20, 30, 40, even 50 banks to choose from, how do you find those strong conservative old banks? Your lawyer will certainly know. Like I said in the past show, your lawyer has the inside dope on the strength of the banking system in his own country. On the other hand, I've seen fresh gringos come down and pick out a bank on the basis of talking to another gringo they just met at a B&B, a Taco Bell, a McDonald's, or a gringo bar. Nope, that's not how you want to do it. You definitely want to put that on your list the very first visit you make to your new lawyer. In fact, if you want to cut through the chase, just ask your new lawyer what bank he uses, and that'll be your new bank. Oh, and by the way, when you do get down here and walk into a bank, you will be enticed by those high interest rates you get on Latin American CDs in the funny money. In fact, generally, whatever they're offering in U.S. dollar CDs, you can just about double that, and that's what you'll get with the local funny money currency. Great deal, huh? Well, that's a subject I'm going to go into a little deeper right now, since, personally, some years ago, I was sucked into a local funny money CD myself, was paying around 14% a year interest. How about that? When, in the very same bank, a U.S. dollar CD was paying 7 or 8%. And at that time in the States, U.S. dollar CDs were paying 3 or 4%. So could that be a smart thing to do? What's the risk if you try that? Well, let me start out with this email from a very knowledgeable and well-traveled seminar attendee, Jack Brett, who you might remember wrote that book called Fast Spanish, a boots-on-the-ground guide to learning your Spanish in Latin America the best and least expensive way. That said, Jack titles his email, "Welcome to the World of Crashing Currencies, Courtesy of the Fed." He says, "Hey Johnny, just looking at the world of crashing currencies after listening to this guy named Andrew Hoffman in a show entitled Strengthening Dollar Means Big Trouble All Around. Then I realized there are some very good deals in some parts of Latin America considering how the dollar has strengthened. Seems that places like Colombia, Argentina, and Chile are on sale if you've got dollars. Not that I'd necessarily want to buy in any of those places, but anybody who does could pick up a deal. What I'm puzzled about most is the Guatemalan quetzal. It just seems to float along there between 7.7 and 7.5 to the dollar year after year with its big supposed breakout to 8.25 to the dollar in 2009. And then slipping back to 7.7 to 7.5 to the dollar once again. And now, weirdly enough, the damn thing seems to be strengthening against the dollar. What gives with that Guatemalan quetzal? Then, Jack said, I looked at the lempira too. That's, of course, in Honduras. And it looks like it was devalued in 2012. But it's not really doing that bad since it's only lost about 15% in 3 years. Compared to what's going on with a lot of other currencies in the world, that's just a nick. So then, what's up with these Central American currencies? Why aren't they crashing? I was thinking it might have something to do with their economic connection to the U.S., but the Mexican peso is down almost 50% since 2008. Now, I know this topic probably isn't exactly a stimulating, crowd-pleasing favorite. It won't have them on the edge of their seats listening to your show, but I bet it's something that some of your listeners are really thinking about. Oddly enough, in a weird way, it's like the Guatemalan quetzal might almost be a safe haven. Who'da thunk? Anyway, just thought I'd mention this in case you have any interest in talking about currencies on your show. Thanks, Johnny. Jack Brett. Okay, Jack, and you know, it might be a boring topic for many of you wannabes and gonna-bes up in Montreal, Milwaukee, and Cleveland. But once you get down here, man, you start looking at the local funny money currencies versus the dollar pretty much on a daily basis. Why? Because with those daily fluctuations, no matter how small, you can often tease out little advantages for yourself. Now, if you remember in a show I did maybe a year and a half ago, I mentioned that some big stores like Sears, Walmart, Costco, for example, and a lot of stores in big malls that have first world franchises will take both the local funny money and U.S. dollars, even well off the gringo tourist trail. Which is why, as I mentioned, you should always carry a bit of both, the local funny money and U.S. funny money. Because more often than not, you can really beat the bank rate, especially when you're off the gringo tourist trail. Simply because those stores, many times, just won't keep up with the current exchange rate. Just because there are so few people paying in dollars. Sometimes they'll have the currency rate pegged to a very, very old figure, sometimes weeks or months ago. I can't tell you how many times I've made out on a deal like that. So, no matter what store you go in, just ask. ¿Cuál es el tipo de cambio? What is the exchange rate? Even if the place hasn't accepted dollars in weeks or months, sometimes the policy is that they will, so just ask. Like Jack Brett says, right now, the Guatemalan quetzal seems very strong. They name their currency after a bird, by the way. A bird the local Guatemalans have hunted to extinction. I think there's only two or three nesting pairs left in the whole country, and they're in protected preserves. Run by, guess who? Do-gooder gringos, of course. You think the locals give a damn? Nope. To a poor, undernourished Guatemalan, they taste just like driveway chicken. But about these Latin American funny money devaluations and, in some cases, like the Guatemalan quetzal, apparent long-term stability. Well, you have to know that when you get a lot of long-term gringo expats together, the subject does come up. In fact, a lot of diverse subjects come up. Because, you see, most expats that I've run into are way above average. Come on, they wouldn't be down here if they didn't have something on the ball. They're the ones that figured out a long time ago that the first world was going to hell in a handbasket. Nope, it's never easy being a step ahead of the crowd. Okay, I'll admit, it's not that we've suddenly become respectable in the eyes of the folks back home in Cleveland. It's just that they no longer have to make up excuses to the neighborhood busybodies who wonder why we left the land of the freaks and the home of the sheeple. Nope, it wasn't that your babysitter dropped you on your head when you were four. As it turns out, you really were the smartest slug in the family. Only no one back home figured that out until just recently. Anyway, you won't read about this anywhere in Latin newspapers because they're clueless. But the consensus among us long-term gringos, why the Central American currencies remain so strong against the dollar, while South American currencies continue to take a beating, well, that's mostly due to those massive U.S. dollar remises flooding into those Central American countries monthly. In fact, in some Central American countries, those remises are so large as to make up the largest part of their GDP. So, with all those U.S. dollars flooding into Latin American banks, by a simple rules of economics, there's no shortage of dollars in countries like Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Honduras, Guatemala, and Salvador. In fact, you'll see articles in the papers in Central America saying that the banks are virtually flooded with U.S. dollars they can't use. And too many dollars means, of course, the value of the dollar will be somewhat depressed, just like if there's a glut of any item, too many refrigerators, too many washing machines, too many gallons of gas, cartons of cigarettes, or boxes of Depends. Whereas when you're looking at countries in South America, you'll realize right away that remises, that is, money sent back to the home country from up in the States, makes up a very tiny percentage of their GDP, less than 5% usually. And why is that? Well, for South American countries, as a percentage of population, they have very few people living up in the States. It's just too damn hard to get from South America on through to Central America, then Mexico, and sneak in the U.S. The fact is, you can't get from South America to Central America by land. It's got to be by air or sea, which makes just that first leg of the journey virtually impossible for poor South Americans. Take Colombia. They've got a population of about 45 million people, and up in the States, there are said to be 800,000 Colombians. That means about one out of every 56 people born in Colombia are living in the United States right now. That's less than 2% of people born in Colombia. But now let's take the Central American country of Honduras. It's got a population of about 6.5 million people, and it's estimated that there are just over 1 million Hondurans living up in the States. By the way, the vast majority of them illegally. That means one out of every six people born in Honduras is now living up in the States. And get this, one in five people born in El Salvador are living up in the States too, meaning 20% of the world's Salvadorian population sending back remises. So, high remisa numbers means a glut of dollars, resulting in more stable local funny money. And if you want to prove that to yourself, just get some boots on the ground and go to Argentina or Venezuela with their very low remisa numbers and heavy controls on U.S. dollars. Now, in the case of Mexico, sure, they have a ton of remisas coming in, but it's not that simple. There are a lot of other factors, including the fact that their number one export, natural gas and petroleum products, and they're priced now at their lowest level since 2008. And of course, they've got that huge narco state going, which some say is the biggest part of their economy right now. So in Mexico, there's a currency tug of war going on, and the peso is losing, again. Not to mention, they've got a thoroughly corrupt government presiding over a failed state. So you really can't predict anything but doom in the long run for the Mexican peso. Okay, let's get back to the other Central American countries now. Just because their currencies seem somewhat stable, at least over the past 5 or 10 years, would those countries be, as Jack Brett said, good places to park your dough because they seem stable? Well, in a word, no. Because in the long run, the currency of every single Latin country has crashed and burned, sometimes in spectacular ways, against the U.S. dollar. Now, of course, Latins don't know that the U.S. dollar has lost 96% of its purchasing power since 1913, the year the Federal Reserve was created. And believe me, you'll get nowhere by trying to force that kind of information down a Latin person's throat. They just won't believe it. And even though, as Jack Brett said, the Guatemalan quetzal has kept its same value against the U.S. dollar for the past 10 years, more or less, especially as Jack Brett pointed out, other Latin currencies, specifically South American currencies, have been absolutely destroyed, some by 50% in just the last year or so. That said, the very first time I rolled through Guatemala in 1985, the quetzal was at parity with the U.S. dollar. Yep, 1-to-1. So that means in the last 30 years, it's lost only about 800% against the U.S. dollar. Of course, it's true, it took that big hit in the first 20 years, and after that, very stable, taking virtually no hit at all. That said, when I first rolled in 85, if I'd have kept my money in the quetzal, I'd have been wiped out. But that's nothing compared to what happened to currencies in South America during the past 30 years. So how about a few examples, starting with Argentina, since it's all over the news lately. Did you know that Argentina has had 5 different currencies in its modern history? Starting with what they called the peso moneda nacional, that was the PMN. Then they had the peso ley. Then they converted to the peso argentino. Then they converted to the austral. And now they have the current peso convertible. Now, try to follow me on this. I know it's going to be hard because even in Argentina, they don't quite understand what happened. Now, that first currency, the PMN, was used until 1970, so that's not so long ago. Now, at first, in the early days, before World War I, it was tied to gold. Then, of course, like every other country, they abandoned the gold standard. In that period of time, it lost 600% to the dollar. So they decided in 1970 to replace that PMN by the peso ley. Not to be confused with Frito-Lay, it's peso-Lay. So what they did was they pulled 2 zeros off the PMN and called it the peso-Lay. So what was originally a 100 peso note was now a 1 peso note. Then inflation got way out of hand again, and in 1983, they changed the peso-Lay to the peso argentino, and get this, dropped 4 zeros off all the notes. So now a 10,000 peso-Lay note was equal to a 1 peso argentino. Then they had runaway inflation again, and in 1985, the peso argentino was replaced by the austral, and they dropped 3 zeros off the argentino. So if you were living in Argentina, you knew exactly what hyperinflation was like. People talk about Zimbabwe and the Weimar Republic after World War II in Germany, but almost no one mentions it happened in Argentina too. Anyway, in 1992, not so long ago, the austral was replaced by the peso convertible, and they dropped 4 zeros off of the austral. Now, the point is, if you lived in Argentina, and you had an Argentine passbook savings account, and you suffered through hyperinflation and the dropping of all those zeros, if you would do the math, and you won't, you would see that the currency retained only 1/70 trillionth. Of its original value. I know this is hard to believe, but it's 1/70 trillionth of its original value. And at the moment, the Argentine peso right now has an official value of 4.7 to the dollar, but trades on the semi-illegal free black and gray market for about 7 pesos to the dollar. Yep, like the Venezuelan Bolivar, it's in the toilet again and on its way to zero. Now, I know a lot of you out there are just not going to be able to comprehend the tragedy in all of this. I'm sure you're sympathetic and you're probably thinking, those poor, stupid Argentines. That's a shame. And you're thinking it can't happen here, right? Well, sadly, huge currency problems are coming to a neighborhood near you. And if you don't quite believe all of this, you think I might be exaggerating or even making this stuff up, send me an email and I'll pop off this article to you so you can see it for yourself. Oh, by the way, you can get some boots on the ground in Argentina. Go to a bank and get an Argentine 1-year certificate of deposit at 25% interest. Sounds great, right? In fact, one Argentine bank I'm looking up right now, called ICBC, will give you 29.1% on a 1-year CD in pesos. Yeah, well, if you don't know the history of the Argentine currency and banking system, it sounds too good to be true. And of course, if you know what we know, it is. Oh, and by the way, if you want to take out a loan, that same bank, ICBC in Argentina, will give you a house, car, or business improvement loan for a mere 37.6 annual percentage rate. Such a deal, huh? I bet they got a lot of takers for that. Okay, now let's talk about the currency meltdown that happened in that great BRICS powerhouse, Brazil. For 150 years, Brazil had a long-standing currency called the real, and in 1942, they created another one because of massive inflation called the cruzeiro, and they dropped two zeros. Then, after another round of massive inflation in 1965, they replaced it with the new cruzeiro, and they dropped three zeros, meaning a $1,000 cruzeiro note was now a one cruzeiro note. After another 20 years of government thievery and stupidity in 1986, they changed the new cruzeiro and replaced it with a cruzado, dropped three zeros there. Then, in 1993, after another round of hyperinflation, the new cruzado was replaced with the cruzeiro real, and they dropped three more zeros. Then, in 1994, after another round of hyperinflation, the new cruzeiro real was replaced with simply the real. And at that point, you could take your old cruzeiro reals, go to a government bank, for every 2,750 of them, they'll give you a new real. Since then, the real has lost about two-thirds or more of its value relative to the dollar. And by the way, if you had one of those original reals in 1941 before all those devaluations, you'd have seen that coin or note devalued about a quadrillion to one. Do you know what a quadrillion is? Well, you will pretty soon because it'll be a very common word as the U.S. starts using that to describe its debt. Now, for those of you who are old enough to remember, back in the 70s, that word billion just started coming into popular use. In fact, I remember back then most people didn't know how many zeros a billion had. In fact, in 1968, it was said the first two billionaires were created. That would be John Paul Getty and Howard Hughes. Before that, the only person who regularly tossed that word billion around, who actually made it popular, was good old Carl Billions and Billions Sagan and his famous Cosmos series on National Public Television. Before that, nobody really knew what a billion was. Then again, that was way back when a billion was actually a pretty big number. And now we have trillions, even Googles, and the soon-to-be-popular quadrillions. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh yeah, Brazil. Oh, and by the way, if you're in Brazil and you go into a bank and want a personal loan, you'll pay around 75% annually. Sounds like a deal, huh? So anyway, back to Jack's original email. Would it be wise to park your money in certain Latin American currencies? Well, I would say only if you're a gambler and only for very short terms. Let's say no more than 3 months. And by the way, I have played that game. I won on the interest rate side and I lost when I converted it back into U.S. dollars. Was it worth it? Did it pay off? No. But remember, you do need to have a local funny money currency account in a bank, unless you're in a Latin country that uses the U.S. dollar. That would be Panama, Ecuador, and El Salvador. However, if you're in any one of the other 17 Latin American countries that have their own currencies, you will want a U.S. dollar account and a local funny money account too. So then how much should you keep in the local funny money account? I'd say about 2 or 3 months worth of expenses. No more. Okay, let's change gears a second now. Here's more confirmation that Panama is well on the gringo tourist trail. Listen to this. According to this article from December 15, 2015, that's a couple of days ago now, there are exactly 214,333 government employees in Panama. So what's that mean? Well, according to NationMaster Employment Statistics, there are 1.49 million Panamanians in the workforce, which means fully 15% of the Panama workforce are your typical lazy-ass parasites working for the government. So how does that compare with other Latin countries? Well, guess what? In countries like Costa Rica, Mexico, Uruguay, countries well on the gringo tourist trail, their percentage of government workers hovers between 15 and about 25%, right up there with the percentages of parasites working for the U.S. government. Whereas with the other 15 out of the 20 Latin countries that aren't on the gringo tourist trail, the percentage of people employed in government is between 5 and 9%. That means in countries off the gringo tourist trail, there are about 50% less government employees. So what does that tell us? Well, I think you got it by now. When the gringos flood in, they want more services, or at least the local Latin government believes they do, so they start growing their bureaucracies accordingly and hiring more fat-ass slugs. So then, which Latin country do you want to live in? Just asking. And now as we close in on the holidays, a kind of a sad story. The other day I was talking to my maintenance guy's wife. She was telling me how her and the people in the neighborhood celebrate Christmas. Now remember, these are very poor people. I pay my maintenance guy like about $15 a day, and she gets about $10 a day as a house cleaner. Now, don't get me wrong, they're not moping around or depressed about it. In fact, by all accounts, they're very happy people who would much rather be working the kind of jobs they do than live the life their parents did, working on a farm for rice, beans, and chickens. Anyway, she said her four, or maybe it's five kids, get two gifts a year. One for their birthday and one for Christmas. And those gifts are clothes. And she said the kids look so forward to getting a few new articles of clothing that when they open their presents late on December 24th, they put the clothes on and sleep in them. And she says most kids leave the price tags on their pants or sweater or whatever they get. Sometimes, get this, for weeks and weeks until they get ruined in the wash or simply fall off. Oh, and she said on Christmas Eve, all the children put 12 pennies under their bed, or whatever the smallest denomination of coin happens to be, which promises 12 months of good luck in the new year. Oh, and about the clothing gifts. That's why when you come to Latin America, you see all the grade school kids in uniforms. That really helps out poor parents when it comes to clothing their kids. And I found out it helps the poorest of kids' self-esteem as well. Because when they're at school, at least, they're all on the same level. They all wear exactly the same clothes, so you can't tell the really poor kids from the middle class ones. Not by appearance, anyway. Whereas for school kids up in the States, there's tremendous competition among brands and styles of clothing. Now, I don't know whose idea it was years and years ago to force Latin kids to wear uniforms at school, but it turned out to be a very good idea. No wonder poor Latins so much prefer to work for gringos because we're generous. We often give them extra food to take home and other free things. Not to mention, we don't treat them like second-class citizens like so many Latin bosses do. Oops, we're near the end now. So I'll just mention I have a few spots left for my 2016 Latin Insider Seminar. Go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. Oh, and don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. Subscribe. It's free, you know.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.